All right, we're thinking here today about the part of the trained by grace theme from the book of Titus that has to do with how various groups of various people, various stages in their lives within a congregation treat each other. And this in Titus is intended to be a display of the work of grace in the lives of people who have committed their all to it. You know, we talk about diversity within the church and at times, and I've thought about the different ways in which we've approached this matter. Scripture certainly speaks of diversity in terms of the gifts we have or the kinds of functions we may have as members of the body of Christ. That's one important illustration of diversity. In the New Testament, one of the remarkable things about Christianity is that the hope that Christians hold, the status that Christians hold in Christ, reaches across social barriers, master and slave and so forth, or Jew and Gentile, religion. The backgrounds, the ways of life that have existed before, reaches across gender barriers, male or female. We may not emphasize enough that the ideal that the New Testament holds up before us suggests that the gospel is intended to create relationships across generational barriers as well. And this paragraph in Titus is significant in this way, I think. And we'll not try to recover the same ground as we did last week too much, but just remember that this is a paragraph which assumes the presence of generations from older to younger, men to women, that these responsibilities are intergenerational, that is, they have obligations toward each other, and that these obligations are met by you and I doing what we are called to do at the stages of life where we find ourselves. In other words, there is not one thing said to me in this passage about what I am to say to younger men. There is something said to me about how I'm to act as a man who's my age now. And you bear in mind in the New Testament, whenever any of the issues are brought up that have to do with a husband or wife or parent or child or older man, younger man or whatever, they always speak to you in whichever role you are. And they're not meant for example, any husband who thinks that passages about wives in the New Testament are meant for him to read to his wife is foolish in the extreme. He will either grow out of it or be brought out of it. The passages in the New Testament that apply that a husband should read are the ones that speak to husbands, you see. And the same things for wives or parents or children or whatever. And that's the Lord's way of dealing with these matters. Now, last week we read what Paul says about the impact that the gospel of grace of God is to have on older men. Older men, there is an ideal that we are to measure maturity by. Older men are to be sober-minded, dignified, self-controlled, sound in faith, in love, and in steadfastness. Healthy faith, healthy love, healthy endurance, in other words, or what he calls for here. Now, let's move to the next group addressed here, older women. I was reading one of the commentaries, and I had to chuckle about this. It said that older men in Greek culture were regarded as reaching that station when they were between 56 and 60. Older women, however, are 60 and above. I take it that means you don't get anyone to admit to this until maybe we should say mature women. Okay, what we're talking about here. And you realize that that we're talking in comparative terms. Notice the word in verse 3, likewise. I take it that that means the same general character as verse 2 describes is to be found in Christian women as well, and also that Christian women are to be. There is an ideal. There is a view of maturity that is to be sought in a Christian woman's life, that she's to aim for, to grow toward, like a sunflower grows toward the sun. Look at what it says here about her. The first of these terms, reverent in behavior. How else is this translated? I have scattered here a couple of different versions. Tell me what word, Barney, what are you reading
it
there?
It says reverent. Okay.
All right, just says reverent, okay.
This says reverent in your bearing.
Reverent in your bearing, all right, in your presence, what about that one, Scott?
This is the American Standard, says reverent in demeanor.
Reverent in demeanor, okay. Any other ways in which this gets translated? You notice that it's more than just the rules you keep or what you do or don't do. It is also the tone of the behavior or the bearing of the person, the demeanor of the individual. I learned in reading about this word that it was originally used to describe the attitude, the spirit, the way a person would go about his behavior when he was in a temple. In other words, in the presence of the gods, and when he was at a holy place. And so this, the idea here is for Christian women, that is a way of life and not just an attitude assumed when one enters one of these structures or sanctuaries that the people might have regarded as being the homes of the gods. This is the permanent attitude of the person. Next.
Bill.
Yes.
The contemporary English version says older women should behave as those who love the Lord should.
As those who love the Lord should. I think that idea is will fit, except I believe in the original terms of the word, this would be what the Old Testament calls godly fear, mm-hmm. only applied. That would be the idea that's here. Next, it says not, this is the ESV, not slanderers. Now remember, each of these things has some things to say about Christian character in general, but in particular, what's needed by a person in this role. How's this term get translated?
Scandal.
Scandalmongers, the NEB has, not someone who enjoys passing along a story or who has a habit of passing along a story about someone. What else?
Malicious
gossip. Say it louder.
Malicious gossips.
Malicious gossip. Someone, not merely someone who passes along a story, but someone who is malicious in intent with it. Brian?
Interesting word. I don't know if you looked it up.
I did, yes. Go ahead and tell us, though. So
it's diabolos.
All right, only in the plural.
And so it's devil.
All right, not devils. A lot of you may know that diabolos, the term for devil, means slanderer or accuser. And if we take it in that way, this is the idea of not being a malicious accuser of other persons. And when I read it, what I think it is saying is this is not someone who assumes the worst of other people or who tries to put other people in the worst possible light. And that would be a particular danger. It's interesting that this gets said about with regard to older women. It has also been said, been used by Paul of with regard to people in other stations or roles in 1 Timothy 3, 1 Timothy 5, as well as here with regard not only to the older women, but also I think you'll notice the general idea in verses 5 and following with regard to leaders, and then with regard to preachers themselves a little bit later here. So you get an idea of that. Any other way in which this gets translated? Okay. Look at the next term here. Not slanderers or slaves to much wine, ESV says. What else do we have in terms of
drink?
Pardon?
Strong drink.
Strong drink. Not addicted to much wine. What else?
Enslaved,
all right. Not enslaved to much wine. Two or three things about this are interesting. First, the term wine in the New Testament, this word, what I think is one that gets used of everything from the fresh juice of the grape to the strongest drink that they do, the kind of drink that could make your eyes red, and I'm assuming your head hurt, and all of that kind of thing. They use the same term. Secondly, no wine that we're reading about here would fit the classification of the hard drinks that are created through distilling. From what I can read, the natural amount of fermentation or alcohol that would be produced by natural fermentation would be 7 to 10% of the beverage, and that generally the practice and the culture of the time was to, because of the scarcity of pure drinking water, would be to dilute the wine that was commonly scarcely of the juice of the grape and drinking water, would be to dilute the wine or to mix it so that it was much weaker. Now, go a step farther with this. What in the pastoral epistles, what use does Paul recommend for wine?
Medicinal
purposes. All right, medicinal purposes. 1 Timothy, what is it, 5:23, you take a little wine for your stomach's sake, it says. It says take it like as if medicine. This is not the encouragement of social drinking, which has its own connections in our culture and its own dangers to the human body and to the human will. And to human associations, I urge you to think about that kind of thing. But if you think about this, if wine were used for medicine and you begin to age a little, what was Paul suggesting that might happen here? You might get to taking too much medicine. You might become enslaved to it or addicted to it. One of my mom's famous uncles told me one time when I was a kid that the doctor told him he needed to drink a beer for his stomach. And just to be on the safe side, he said he drank 6 every day. Now, he did not live a very successful life. He was not as pleasant as Otis on Mayberry. I tell you, he was often in the same condition, but not near as pleasant. Well, that's what this is saying. Now, a modern parallel. What application of this might come along?
Well, anymore, we have people becoming addicted to pain medications.
All right. Any kind, the addictions that go on range all the way these days from pain. Of course, alcohol or other substance has always been a threat, but pain medications or prescription meds to various internet deals. Have you guys seen the Toyota commercial? I forget what kind of vehicles, but it has this young lady sitting behind her computer at a table all by herself, and she is putting on there what poor shape her parents are in. They have only 16 friends at all on basically the shows their parents. She can't help them interact with people. She can't help them really live. It shows them out on this vehicle with their bicycles on top, and they're meeting their friends, and they're riding mountain bikes all over. And she says, I have, I forget how many hundred friends she has, and she's just sitting there by herself with her computer screen. This is really living. I wish I could help them. And they pull back in all smiley and joking. That's a commentary on our times. It's only funny because there's truth to it. And the more mature view is that the person does not depend on something outside of self in order to live with self. That's how I would say it. Tom?
We have developed a term in our society today called doctor shopping.
Well, only one among many types of shopping. That's true. All right. But Dad, if you remember how I just said it, this is an individual who is not dependent on something outside of herself in order to be able to live with herself. It is not describing avoidance of doing what the doctor says, but it is describing the need for this person to have a view of self that doesn't depend on things outside of self. And then notice that this is not merely a negative picture. What does it say next?
Teach what is good.
All right. This is the task of the older the older Christian woman has a unique role to fill within a congregation that cannot be done by someone else or in another way. And this is always a huge need, and the less involved in extended families are in the lives of our everyday lives, the more important this becomes, at least in my view. Young women who belong to the Lord are not to get their view of what the goal in life is from the cover of People magazine or from an afternoon talk show or from other young women who have the same problems and the same disappointments as they do. The view that's here is that Christian young women need to have a view of how to live and what to expect that they have seen in successful experience. And listen, this is a much more of a huge leap than you think it is. The natural instinct is that when you have problems or you have troubles, then you look up somebody who is exactly that same age, going through exactly the same problems, and you tell each other how you're struggling with this, and you cry on each other's shoulder. That's understandable, but it's not the way of the church. What grace means is that people upon whom it has been working become the source of instruction and motivation in the lives of those who have just started letting grace work on them, if you see. Now, what would one need to be in order to be teachers of what is good? This is what Titus is to let them know that they are to be, because this is what
accords with sound doctrine, verse 1. What would one, a Christian lady, need to, how would we go about this here? Teachers of what is good. By the way, how else is this translated?
Set a high standard.
Set a high standard. I'm not sure that goes far enough with this, but I know it gets translated that way. Yeah, I know. Appreciate it. Anybody else?
Teachers of good things.
Teachers of good things.
Teach what is proper.
Teach what is proper. Okay. The idea is important, and verse 4, I want to add to it so I can talk about both of them at once. And to train, and to the word to train the younger women, the word for training means to call to responsibility, or to encourage, or to support, or to help to bring up in this way. Now, what does this call for on the part of an older Christian woman? Won't she first have to, before you can teach something, what would you say?
Yes, be all the above.
You'd have to know it, wouldn't you? You would have to be someone who is seeking to practice what is good. And then it means that you have to take the initiative. You don't merely wait for a younger lady to come to you and ask you. You watch what folks are going through. You try to see which of these young ladies is carrying a load that is big right now. Which of these young ladies do not have moms and dads around real close to be grandparents? Which of these young ladies might not have grown up in a Christian home and may not have had mature, spiritually minded role models? Which of these young ladies might I get close to and might I help? Which of these younger Christian ladies don't have husbands who share their faith? Which one of them have children that are real close together in age and are a handful when they're little? I mean, you can go. Don't grin, Casey. you can think of what we're talking about here. In other words, it is the older lady who initiates the relationship here. And I realize that this is saying something to us that may not be the natural thing, but the older Christian lady has got to realize that she has something to offer that there's no substitute for, and it is experience and living for the Lord. Linda.
I'll tell something out here. Wednesday Night Ladies Class is a really good place to allow the interaction of all levels of ladies. And I like it because you can have single ladies, you can have young married, you can have older ones. And as they come, and as some of these topics come up in a pretty informal type environment, you have folks like Ruth is not here, Ruth Lund, Ruth Reeves, myself, some of the older ladies that can maybe listen to the words that they're saying. And if they have a question on submission, well, that topic will come up, marriage and submission, maybe listen to the words and say, but you just said in your comment that I was willing to do what he wanted. Mm-hmm. You know, they may want to complain, or they may want to say, this is hard, this is difficult. But I think that experience through the levels of age
I appreciate you pointing out that there can be settings where this can take place, and that would be certainly one of these. That is a setting where a group of people can do this. There's also the need for it to be on an individual relationship. Can you see from what Linda just said that a Christian lady can do for younger Christian ladies what what I wouldn't be able to do. I got to go to ladies' class once, but I just basically preached to them and they never let me come back. and you see what we're getting at. A teacher of what is good, and then to train the Christian young lady. There is the idea that this kind of thing does not merely happen sort of automatically. And when we're going to look in just a moment what it says to younger ladies too in the Lord, that there's a surprising part about this. But notice now that while other parts of the pastoral epistles, 1 Timothy 2 would be one example of this, which would say that the Christian woman is not the leader in the assembled church, where she exercises the role of the leader or the teacher of the whole group. That does not free her from the kind of teaching which only she can do and in the proper settings. And this lays value on that. The younger Christian woman does not merely follow the culture, nor to repeat the family patterns that she may have seen. She has an ideal in the Lord that she has to learn to aim for. Tom?
The danger of not having the opportunity to be around people, women, people, men, everybody yeah. like that. I had an investigation not long ago where a 53-year-old woman with her 30-year-old daughter and two grandkids, and the lady looks at me and says to me, "What would it take to get you to take that off?"
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought, I left thinking.
He's holding up a wedding ring, yeah.
And I left thinking, her daughter's hearing and seeing that, and her grandkids are hearing and seeing that, and we're just going to repeat the cycle.
Yeah, and
the
they
value of that goodness in some of those people, just, man, it's just immeasurable.
Yeah, yeah. And what is good is what is beautiful or what is lovely, not merely what is passable or acceptable in the culture. And that's the difference between good and bad, right and wrong. It's interesting that it starts in the character of Christian women. And I don't know how much we stress that enough, that in so many ways, godly women are the stewards of goodness in a culture and in life. All right, look at verse 4 now, the younger women, and in this case, they're spoken of here based on what the older Christian women teach them to do. Verse 4 and 5 now would be the part here. And what is said at the end of verse 5 seems to suggest to me that the reputation of Christianity would be determined by the pagan world in large measure based on how the younger women behave. It said, what's the first thing that it says that younger women are to be trained to do? To love their husbands and children. Wouldn't that just happen naturally? Why was there a need for this? By the way, the term for love that's used in both cases is more the affection kind of love, I think, and not the commitment type of love, which is an act of the will. This is the affection type of love. Why would this need to be taught?
They have arranged marriages.
All right. Very often, the choice of a marriage partner was made by agreement between parents for their sons and daughters. So there would be the need for the affection. You think of it in Western eyes now, can someone be trained to have warm affection and friendship and love for a husband and children, or do you just fall into that? That's a challenge to us, isn't it?
Can there be romance in a situation where a person is trained how to create the memories, or do we just fall into that based on, what do they call them, pheromones? I've seen that on TV at least. I don't know if that's true or not. But you see what a challenge this is? Christianity has a message that is different from how people ordinarily think. And the message of Christianity is that you can, because it centers on you deciding how you are going to behave and not merely responding based on how the other person treats you, you can be the one who breaks the cycle, who makes a difference, and so forth. And so how to show kind and warm affection to husbands and children. What else is she to be taught? To be, verse 5, to be this term we've run across in several settings in this book already. Self-control. It was used of older men in verse 2. And how else does this get translated? The first term in verse 5, if you're comparing.
Sensible. Sober-minded.
Sober-minded.
Temperate.
Discreet. All right, the idea is the younger Christian woman needs to be trained to not be silly, to outgrow the 13-year-old stage, to be someone who has some common sense about her. The next word, pure.
Chaste.
It's not C-H-A-S-E-D, but C-H-A-S-T-E. Okay. Pure. What else?
Chaste.
All right. There is some holiness or some honor about her. And, of course, we're talking here about purity of words, purity of thinking, purity of imagination, purity of body, purity of sexual relationship, and so forth. Then what next? All right. The word kind gets used here. It comes after the worker of home, in the SV at least. The term for being a worker at home has been much abused. It means to show energy in the house or at home, in the family. It does not mean that a Christian woman must, by scriptural obligation, not work outside the home. This is a term which is talking about how to make a home. And someone who takes an interest in making a home, and how to be energetic and involved in family life, and to attend to and organize the chores that have to be taken care of in a household. A mom may make a schedule in which she has on there who takes out the trash. That doesn't mean she has to take it out. Whose turn it is to wash the dishes or to put the dishes away, it doesn't mean she has to do it. It does mean that it has to be done for a family to live. And anybody with a sound mind, I think, realizes that not all Christian women can be, not all Christian women can avoid having a job besides at home. In our economy, especially, that is the case. This is saying there is value to being an energetically involved keeper of the home, worker of the home, and it is a job, and it is an honor, and it is a need. But this is not trying to determine whether someone could make it to heaven or not based on which kind of economic setting they have to deal with. I hope we can realize that. I will say that we're living in a culture where we are needing to create more of a pattern of getting by on less so that attention can be paid to children and the home. I will say that, and I think everybody here recognizes that. I want to say that in my work, at least, I run across a lot more young ladies who wish they could stay home than I do people who are at home wishing they could go to work. You take that for what it's worth. That's what I see. And you can see how this would take some training. The word, has the bell, was I talking too loud? Okay. I think if it hasn't sounded, it should have. So I want to do the kind thing here and let you guys go pick up your kids, O'Malley. You go ahead and take care of that. Thank you guys for being here with us today. Everybody have a good week. Have a happy 4th.